You know that feeling when you're trying to get your head around something huge, something impacting the whole world, but every time you look, the story's changed.
No,
That's
absolutely.
kind of where a lot of us are with the U.S.-China trade situation, right?
Yeah.
You actually sent us a really interesting YouTube discussion where they were grappling with all this.
Yeah, trying to find some solid ground amidst, well, shifting sands seems like the right phrase.
Exactly.
That YouTube video, The Trade Wars Have Begun, it really captured a snapshot, didn't it? Right as new things were breaking. It's valuable because it's so current, but, you know, as we dig in, we'll see just how fast things move.
Totally. And it started with this very human, almost funny attempt to make sense of it. Freddie buying that, what was it, a 1776 Spanish gold coin,
A doubloon, yeah.
right? A doubloon as a hedge against tariffs, thinking pirate treasure. And then it turns out this thing is tiny, worth maybe, what, $660?
It's quite the reality check, isn't it? But it does bring this huge abstract thing down to a personal level.
Yeah, it does.
It shows how people are just trying to figure out how to navigate these massive economic shifts, even if, you know, their personal strategy is maybe a bit dwarfed by the forces involved.
Right. So for you listening, our mission here with this deep dive is really to dissect that discussion,
Yeah.
pull out the key info. We want to understand what's actually happening with this trade war, what's driving it, and what consequences might be down the line. You're looking for clarity, and that's what we're going to try and unpack.
Okay, let's do it. One of the first things that really jumped out from that YouTube discussion was just how incredibly fast the tariff situation is changing.
Yeah.
They were literally recording like hours after new announcements. It just shows how hard it is for anyone to keep up in real time.
Almost dizzying. And they even had to correct something from a previous video about how the initial tariffs were calculated.
Right. There was that formula they mentioned, imports minus exports divided by imports, which, as they said, felt a bit arbitrary. Yeah. It's a very strange way to try and frame a trade imbalance, almost like saying the country with the surplus is somehow imposing a tariff just by selling more. Unusual take.
Definitely unusual. But then things really went haywire in the week before they recorded. The markets reacted badly.
Oh, we
They
did.
talked about red day after red day, stocks falling, but bond yields rising.
Which is not what you'd normally
They
expect.
called it the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, that paints a picture. Usually when stocks tumble, investors look for safety, right? Government bonds, US treasuries.
Right.
That demand pushes bond prices up and the interest rate goes down.
Which connects to this theory they brought up, supposedly from Scott Bessent,
Yeah.
the idea that tariffs could actually cause a stock crash, pushing everyone to U.S. bonds, driving up demand, lowering our borrowing costs, helping refinance the debt.
It's a theory, a pretty aggressive one if you think about it, banking on essentially market pain to lower interest rates. Risky.
But, like the YouTube host pointed out, that's not what happened. Borrowing costs were going up
Exactly.
because countries, they mentioned Japan specifically, were selling U.S. treasuries, dumping treasuries, they called it.
Which really raises the question, why sell? Maybe a lack of confidence because of all this trade tension? Or maybe they just needed the cash themselves, you know, with the global economy shifting.
And higher yields mean it costs the U.S. government more to borrow money later.
Precisely. More expensive borrowing adds to the debt down the road.
Yeah.
Not ideal.
And then came what they call the pivot, the U.S. hitting pause on tariffs for countries that didn't hit back.
Like Vietnam, yeah, now facing a flat 10%.
And a market liked that news.
Oh, yeah, very positive reaction. It suggests maybe a rethink of the initial broad brush strategy, perhaps realizing the fallout for allies, the instability.
But at the same time, tariffs on China just kept climbing, reaching, what was it, 125% total?
Yeah, I mean, 125%. Think about that. The price more than doubles.
It's huge.
At that point, it stops being just about leverage, doesn't it? It's a massive barrier. It really signals a move towards, well, a major separation. Decoupling of trade.
That's a big step.
It's a huge geopolitical signal, not just economics. It suggests a fundamental shift away from managing trade towards actively seeking separation. The long-term effects on supply chains, international relations could be profound.
Which led one of the YouTube guys to ask, you know, a really good question. If you already have super high tariffs,
Yeah.
like 100% on Chinese EVs,
Right.
what's the real impact of going from, say, 104% to 125%? Aren't things already basically shut down at that point?
That's a very sharp point. That extra 21%, it's probably less about squeezing out more economic advantage and much more about signaling a definitive break. Like they said, 125% basically screams, we want total decoupling.
And then there's the EU issue. they did retaliate earlier, right? With 25% counter tariff.
They did. Before this U.S. pivot, so.
Are those EU tariffs still on? The video pointed out the latest U.S. announcement didn't mention them.
Yeah, that lack of clarity is pretty significant. It just highlights how messy this gets when you're fighting on multiple fronts. You risk confusing or damaging relationships with key partners like the EU. Loads of uncertainty.
This whole back and forth, it creates this feeling of inconsistency, as the YouTube host put it. Uncertainty.
Definitely.
They compared it to the situation earlier with Canada and Mexico. Tariffs on, tariffs off.
And that instability is terrible for businesses. How do you make decisions about investing, about supply chains, when the rules keep changing overnight? It's incredibly difficult.
And it really seems to undercut the argument that, you know, these tariffs will magically bring manufacturing jobs back home, especially at these levels.
Yeah.
Like one of the hosts joked, if you opened a factory based on a 40% tariff, you must be feeling pretty nervous. Now it's 125%.
The idea that tariffs alone do that is, well, it's simplistic. You need the infrastructure, the skilled workers, the cost competitiveness. Tariffs don't just conjure those things up.
They also mentioned the end of that exception for direct orders under $800 from China.
Ah, the de minimis rule.
Right. Apparently, that's how companies like Tu and Shane built their whole business. They even quoted someone at Shandon saying, if this goes away, they'll use stronger language.
It really shows the direct hit these policy changes can have on specific business models. Big disruption potential for online retail.
Now, the YouTube discussion named some key figures pushing for these tariffs in the administration based on their understanding. Scott Bessant at Treasury,
mm-hmm.
Howard Lutnick at Commerce, they called him a hype man.
Yeah, that suggests maybe a focus on the positive spin, let's say.
And Peter Navarro, the senior advisor.
Yes.
His belief in how fast U.S. manufacturing could come back. He apparently said maybe a couple of months.
Which seems optimistic, to put it mildly.
Especially when you contrast it with Elon Musk, who's been very anti-tariff, very focused on building here. Musk apparently calls Navarro Peter Rardo.
That public spat really highlights the clash of views, doesn't it? Between business leaders actually doing manufacturing and some policy advisors. And Navarro's history, you know, with inventing an economist called Ron Vara.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
It does make you question the analysis sometimes.
Then there's Scott Bessant again.
Yeah.
They suggested he might have been skeptical about tariffs before, but now he's a strong advocate inside.
His apparent shift is interesting, yeah.
And they played that clip of him with the analogy, the basketball court. Threatening allies who didn't retaliate with a gun?
Yeah, that analogy. It's certainly vivid, but maybe not the best way to win friends and influence allies. It risks undermining any chance of coordinated action.
Which brings us right to that point. Coordinated tariffs versus the U.S. going it alone.
Crucial difference.
The YouTube hosts stress the negative reactions from allies like Australia. Their PM saying the tariffs were unwarranted, a reciprocal tariff would be zero.
Right. Pushing allies away.
And they noted fewer WTO probes against China because countries are now more focused on what the U.S. is doing.
That's a really critical takeaway. Going it alone often isolates you. Allies who might share concerns about China's practices could have been partners. A united front would be much, much stronger.
Okay, let's switch gears slightly to bonds. They came up a lot. For those of us not in finance day to day, can you just give us the simple version? What are bonds? Why do they matter here?
Sure. Think of a government bond, like a U.S. Treasury bond, as basically an IOU from the government.
Yep.
The government needs to borrow money, so it sells these bonds. Investors buy them, lending money to the government for a set time. In return, the government pays back the original amount plus interest. That interest rate is the yield.
And U.S. Treasuries are seen as super safe.
Generally, yes. Considered one of the safest investments in the world.
And the video mentioned an auction system determines the price and the yield. High demand means higher prices, but lower yields.
Exactly. If lots of people want to buy bonds, they'll accept a lower interest rate, a lower yield, because it's so safe. If demand is weak, the government has to offer a higher yield to tempt buyers.
So connecting back to that tariff theory.
Right.
The idea was tariffs crash stocks, investors flee to safe U.S. bonds. Bond demand goes up, yields go down, U.S. borrowing costs decrease.
That was the hoped-for chain reaction, yes. A flight to safety that would ultimately help the U.S. government's finances by making borrowing cheaper.
But, as we heard, not what happened.
Yeah.
Countries started selling their U.S. bonds, dumping treasuries. which made yields go up.
Exactly the opposite. When big holders like other countries sell lots of bonds, it floods the market, increases supply.
Okay.
To sell those bonds, the price has to drop. And because bond prices and yields move in opposite directions, yields go up.
Making it more expensive for the U.S. government to borrow in the future.
You got it. Increases the cost of servicing the national debt.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, to really grasp the roots of all this, we need that broader context, right? China's incredible rise. The YouTube video touched on the history. Post-WWII, U.S. shaping the global trade system, UN-WTO.
Yeah, after World War II, the U.S. was economically dominant and really set the stage, established the rules-based order. That system initially reflected American interests.
But then China joins the WTO in 2000. That was the game changer.
Absolutely pivotal moment. It gave China massive access to global markets, fueled their incredible expansion. Did they show that chart in the video?
Yeah, the one showing how most countries used to trade more with the U.S., now it's more with China.
That visual really says it all, doesn't it? A fundamental shift in global trade flows.
It's staggering. In barely two decades, China becomes the world's factory. What was the stat? A third of global manufactured goods?
Something like that, yeah. More than the U.S., Japan, Germany, South Korea combined. Dominant in robots, shipbuilding, batteries, drones, EVs. That kind of rapid rise inevitably reshapes everything. It lifted millions out of poverty in China, absolutely. But it also caused huge shifts in manufacturing elsewhere, fueling these concerns in the U.S. about, you know, falling behind.
The YouTube discussion mentioned the arguments about fair trade, IP theft, those issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the core feeling in the U.S. seems to be that sense of losing ground in key areas.
And look, there are legitimate concerns about some Chinese practices. It's not just the U.S. saying this. The video mentioned India, the EU, Brazil, Australia. Other WTO members have raised similar issues too. It's a widespread challenge within the current global trade rules.
Which brings us back to the difficulty of actually rebuilding manufacturing outside China, the whole value chain thing. It's not just about tariffs.
Not at all. Global supply chains are incredibly intricate now. Setting up serious manufacturing elsewhere that takes huge investment, specialized equipment, skilled people, technical know-how, and guess where a lot of that equipment and expertise currently resides?
China.
Right. Robots, parts, the knowledge. It's deeply interconnected.
They mentioned transshipping, too, as a way to get around tariffs.
Ah, yeah. Routing goods through a third country. Maybe slap on a new label. Try to benefit from lower tariffs that way.
Yumiki.
It just shows the limits of doing this unilaterally. Without broad international cooperation, companies will find workarounds to cut costs.
And tariffs alone just don't make you competitive. That example they gave of the Chinese company, CIMC.
Setting up a factory in the U.S., right?
Yeah. But they were still being undercut by American firms just importing and rebranding Chinese goods.
That's such a telling story. Real competitiveness comes from efficiency, tech, cost effectiveness through the whole process, not just from tariffs acting as a wall.
The discussion also touched briefly on subsidies, the carrot instead of the stick.
Right. Things like the Build Back Better ideas, the GPS Act.
Especially for semiconductors, that reliance on Taiwan feels pretty risky.
It's a huge vulnerability. So strategic subsidies in critical areas like chips, that's a more targeted way to boost domestic production, address national security. The TSMC factory going up in Arizona is a big step.
A very expensive step, but maybe necessary.
It's a start, though. The global chip landscape is still heavily tilted towards East Asia.
And this idea of developed countries moving up the value chain, making more complex stuff, services.
Yeah, that's been the trend.
But the YouTube hosts questioned if that's sustainable long term. Do we still need some basic manufacturing for resilience?
It's a valid question. Moving up the value chain makes sense economically, often, but relying entirely on others for essential goods, core manufacturing, that creates vulnerabilities, as we've seen recently. Finding the right balance. That's the strategic debate, really.
Okay, so the YouTube hosts also tackled some common pro-tariff arguments head on. One was, don't worry about the stock market. It only affects rich people.
Right, that old line. But it overlooks a couple of key things. First, lots of ordinary people, especially those near retirement, have stock exposure through 401ks, pension funds.
So market crashes do hit them.
Could directly impact their retirement security, absolutely.
And they brought up the wealth effect.
Yeah, the psychological impact. When people see their investments or home values drop, they feel less wealthy.
Even if they haven't actually sold anything.
Exactly. And feeling less wealthy often leads to cutting back on spending, which slows down the whole economy. It ripples outwards. Less consumer spending means lower business revenue, potentially slower growth for everyone.
And maybe the most direct impact, businesses having to pay these huge tariffs up front at the port, straining their cash flow.
Absolutely. It hits working capital immediately. For some, especially smaller businesses, that might mean having to make really tough decisions quickly, like layoffs, just to cover the tariff bill. It's real financial pressure.
Another argument they looked at was history. The U.S. used tariffs back in the 1800s to build industries like shipbuilding.
True. Tariffs were used then. But the context is crucial.
How so?
Those were often highly targeted tariffs for specific infant industries the government wanted to nurture. It wasn't usually these broad, sweeping tariffs across everything. Plus, the global economy today is vastly different. Complex supply chains, much higher risk of retaliation that hurts your own economy. It wasn't the same game back then.
Right. Different world. Finally, they addressed the period of pain argument. You know, we need some short-term economic pain for long-term gain. They compared it to the Argentinian president. They blanked on the name initially.
Javier Milei.
Milei, right.
Yeah.
But the crucial point they made was Milei is actually strongly anti-tariff.
Exactly. The analogy was completely flawed. It's so important to get the facts right when you're making these comparisons.
It undermines the whole argument.
It does. And the idea that any economic pain automatically leads to future gain is just simplistic. It really matters what's causing the pain and what the actual policies are. Not all pain is productive.
So wrapping this deep dive up, it's just crystal clear from that YouTube discussion. This trade situation with China is incredibly complex, incredibly dynamic.
Absolutely. And the consequences, potentially huge. For the U.S., for the whole global economy.
The rapid policy shifts,
yeah.
The different arguments flying around, it creates so much uncertainty.
It really does. And the sense is that these unilateral tariff actions seem to be causing more friction, even with allies, than maybe finding solutions. Finding an effective long-term strategy seems elusive right now.
And underpinning it all are these really deep issues, right? China's incredible economic growth, its manufacturing dominance, that's triggered genuine concerns in the U.S. and elsewhere about staying competitive.
Understanding that whole backdrop, the power shifts, the supply chain complexities, is just essential to making any sense of the current disputes and thinking about where things might go.
You said at the start you were hoping to get a better handle on this quickly but thoroughly. We've really tried to do that by unpacking the key points and the different perspectives from that YouTube discussion.
We definitely covered a lot of ground, from the immediate market jitters to the big structural changes and the policy arguments.
So here's a final thought, something to chew on. Given everything we've talked about, the fast changes in global trade, China's position, the challenges and downsides of using tariffs like this, what do you think are the most effective, the most sustainable long-term strategies for the U.S.? To stay competitive, to ensure economic security in this, well, constantly changing world, it's definitely something to keep thinking about as this all continues to unfold.